ఓం శ్రీ గురుభ్యో నమః. హరి ఓం. సదాశివసమారంభాం శంకరాచార్యమ్యమాం అస్మదాచార్య పర్యంతాం వందే గురు పరంపరాం సద్గురు చరణారవిందాభ్యాం నమః. బ్రహ్మసూత్రాస్ చాప్టర్ 3 అధికరణం 1 తదంతర ప్రతిపత్త్యాధికరణం తదంతర ప్రతిపత్తౌ బ్రహ్మతి సంపరిష్వక్తః ప్రశ్న నిరూపణాభ్యాం త్రయాత్మకత్వాత్తు భూయస్త్వాత్ ప్రాణగతేశ్చ అగ్నియాతి గతి శృతేరితి చేత్ న వాక్తత్వాత్ ప్రథమే అశ్రవణాదితి చేత్ న తాయేవ హి ఉపపత్తేః అశ్రుత్వాదితి చేత్ న ఇష్టాధికారిణాం ప్రతీతేః వాక్తం వా అనాత్మవిత్వాత్ తథా హి దర్శయతి. సెకండ్ అధికరణం కృతాత్యయాధికరణం. కృతాత్యయే అనుశయవాన్ దృష్టస్మృతిభ్యాం యతేతం అనేవంచ చరణాది చేత్ న ఉపలక్షణార్థేతి కార్ష్ణాజిని ఆనర్తక్యం ఇది చేత్ న తత్ అపేక్షత్వాత్ సుకృత దుష్కృత ఏవ ఇతి తు బాధరి. అనిష్టాధికార్యాధికరణం. అనిష్టాధికారిణాం అపి చ శృతం సంయమనే త్వనుభూయ ఇతరేషాం ఆరోహ అవరోహౌ తద్గతి దర్శనాత్ స్మరంతి చ అపి చ సప్త తత్రాపి చ తద్వ్యాపారాద్ అవిరోధః విద్యాకర్మణోః ఇతి తు ప్రకృతత్వాత్ న తృతీయే తతోపలబ్ధే స్మర్యతే అపి చ లోకే దర్శనాచ్చ తృతీయ శబ్ద అవరోధః సంశోకజస్య. సాభావ్య ఆపత్త్యధికరణం. తత్ సాభావ్య ఆపత్తిః ఉపపత్తేః నాతిచిరాధికరణం. న అతిచిరేణ విశేషాత్ అన్య అధిష్ఠితేషు పూర్వవత్ అభిలాపాత్. Whomsoever is keeping the microphone on, I cannot continue my lecture. Please turn it off. I am telling so many times. In my screen, I see only Mr. Balakrishnan's phone on. Please turn it off. Otherwise, people are going to have recording of all kinds of noises. So we saw the general introduction to this adhikaranam in the last class, where the Purvapakshi says, because of Punya Karma, the Jiva goes to Swargaloka, and later he may become a human being, reborn human being, all right. But before human form, the Jiva becomes a plant, mark my words, becomes a plant, because of the Pashu Himsa in animal sacrifice, in the yajnas that he does. It is a birth as a plant. Becomes a plant means it's a birth as a plant, suffers for a short while, and then comes to male body, be a female body and all that. It is natural justice, according to Purvapakshi. Now the Siddhantin says that there is no birth as plants at all. This jiva coming through panchagni status, all the stages that we saw, going to Swargaloka, all that thing, and the jala shariram, the various paths, mega and all that, it is not born as plants, and it only travels through the plant body without going through the pleasure and pains of the plant body, male body and the female body. When it gathers its own bhoga sharira later, it will experience sukham and dukkham. When it is born after the fifth stage, then it will have its own bhoga shariram, and then it will experience sukham and dukkham. That is the contention of Siddhanta. Now let us see the general analysis of this sutra. Here Vyasacharya says that the jiva comes to the plant not as an abhimani jiva. There is some other abhimani jiva already in the plant. We already mentioned about the host jiva and the guest jiva, all that thing we spoke in the last class. So this abhimani jiva is the host jiva, and the other jiva is antargata jiva, that is not the abhimani jiva, that is the guest jiva. And Vyasacharya says, recording the word purvavat in the sutra, we read the word anya adhishtiteshu purvavat abhilapat. That is a sutra. So the word purvavatim, we have been taking secondary meaning only earlier also in previous other cases. So we should take only similar situation here also. Actually, we saw in the 22nd sutra in Sabhavyadhikarana. And Vyasacharya says, you recollect that. And in that adhikaranam, we saw the Chandogya mantra that uses the expression that jiva becomes vayu. That's why I said, mark the word becomes. Jiva becomes vayu, cloud and all that thing. If you remember the Chandogya mantras, 5th chapter, 10th section, 5th mantra and 6th mantra, tasmin evat sampadam ushitva ataitam evadvanam punar nivartante etetam akasham akashadvayum vayur bhutva. Bhutva means this becomes. Vayur bhutva dhumo bhavati, dhumo bhutva abram bhavati, abram bhutva mego bhavati, mego bhutva pravarshati taihi vrihi yava voshati vanaspateham tilamasha iti jayante ato vaikalum durnishprapataram yoyohi annamati yoretaha sinchati tadbhuya eva bhavati. This is the two mantras that we quoted in the last class. There we analyze and we arrived at the meaning that jiva does not become vayu, etc. We should take the literal, we should not take the literal meaning of bhutva, of becoming, because jiva is a chetana tattvam. Whereas the question of, where is the question of them, the satyetana tattvam at all? For jiva to become vayu and all, they are all achetanam. So it means it looks similar to the vayu only. We mentioned at that time the word semblance, the semblance. So it looks similar to vayu only. It doesn't become vayu. Therefore, there we logically rejected the word bhutva. Just as we rejected there, here also we cannot take that primary meaning. So purvavat, take the indirect meaning. So now let us do the word analysis of this sutra. Anyam adhishtiteshu purvavat abhilapat is the sutra. This is the 24th sutra, first pada, third chapter, 315th running Brahma Sutra. Purvavat means, as in the case of the previous stages, purvavat. Anya adhishtite, the jiva gets association with the plant bodies. Jiva doesn't become plant bodies. Jiva gets association with the plant bodies, which are presided by other jivas. Because other jivas, they are already present in those shariram, plant shariram. The other jivas are the abhimani jivas. They already are born like those plants because of their own punya papa karmas. Abhilapat, this is known from the Shruti state. How do we know? From Shruti is the pramana. So this is the running meaning of this sutra. Now let us see the significance of the words. Anya adhishtite, jiva enters plants and all that thing, which is already identified by some other jiva. As I told you, the host jiva is already present in those plants, whereas this jiva is going, it is only identified. It refers to only, originally identifying means, body identification means abhimani jiva. So I have body identification, I am deha abhimani I am. Same way for the tree also, tree shariram, there is a deha abhimani of that tree. That is abhimani jiva. So jiva enters plants, etc., which is already identified by some other jiva. Teshu, into such plants, jiva enters as a guest jiva. This jiva enters as a guest jiva. It does not identify with that body of the tree, of the plant, and no sukham and dukkham, it will come through the body at all for that. Purvavate, as in the case of the previous stages, where we did not take the primary meaning at all. Like there also, it doesn't become that shariram, it doesn't become the abhimani jiva, it becomes the antargata jiva. This we already saw in the last class. So abhilapat. Abhilapat means this we come to know from Chandogya 5.10.5 and 6. Tasmin yavat sampadam ushitva atetam yavadvanam punar nirvartante yatetam akasham akashadvayum vayur bhutva dhumo bhavati, all that. Then Shankaracharya, he gives another supporting argument also. He says, for argument's sake, for argument's sake we can take, right? For argument's sake, let us assume, After the third stage, the jiva really becomes a plant and it becomes an abhimani jiva. This jiva, this person who did all the punya karmas, he went to Sargaloka because of his great yagas and all, and then now he is coming back to be reborn. So that jiva, that becomes, let us say, a plant and becomes the abhimani jiva as a plant. Then the abhimani jiva, which is in the plant kingdom, has to come to the male body, because that is how the rebirth happens. Abhimani jiva has to come to the male body in the fourth stage. Third stage is the plant body. And the fourth stage is the male body. It has to come in Panchagni Vidya. You should remember that. So can the abhimani jiva, which is in the plant, in the form of food, etc., can it enter the father's body? That is the question. Can the abhimani jiva, you have to be careful about all these words, abhimani jiva, antargata jiva, which is in the plant, in the form of food, can it enter the father's body? Shankaracharya says, it is impossible. Normal human being does not consume the plant directly. The plant is tormented and tortured. And when it is done beyond the limit, the abhimani jiva leaves that body. When the abhimani jiva leaves the body, only during maranam. So when the plant is tormented, tortured, we do all the processing, cooking of the food and all that thing, then at that time, the abhimani jiva cannot be present there. It leaves that body. Therefore, Shankaracharya argues, assuming that it becomes abhimani jiva, in the process of cooking and all that processes, it would have left the plant, and by consuming that, it would not have got transferred into the male body. That is this argument. Whereas if it is antargata jiva, not the abhimani jiva, antargata jiva, which is temporary, transient jiva, whatever is done to the plant, antargata jiva, as I mentioned in the last class, does not enjoy any sukham or dukham. So whatever is done to the plant, you can torture it, you can do so many processes, cook it, everything you do, antargata jiva will not quit, because it won't go through any sufferings. It won't go through any sukham, dukham, pleasure, pain, none of those. It does not have sukha dukkha and pleasure pain. So antargata jiva, even after the cooking process, will get transferred to the next stage, namely going into the male body. So we have to, the doubt was whether the plant that is there, that plant itself goes to the body, or the antargata jiva that is transferred from the reins, megha and all that thing to the plant body, that only gets transferred to the male body is the question. This is the additional argument given by Shankaracharya. Now let us go to the next sutra. Ashuddham iti chet na shabdat. Ashuddham iti chet na shabdat. This is the 25th sutra, first pada, third chapter, 316th running Brahma Sutra. So an objection to the previous sutra, that is 24, this is 25th sutra, 24 is raised and refuted here. And as we said, in this Adhikaranam, the Krishna Gati of the Vedic ritualist is talked about. We should understand. I hope you are with me with respect to the context of these sutras. We mentioned it in the last class. We are talking about Krishna Gati. A person does a lot of yagas and all that thing. Through that, he gets punyam. So through Krishna Gati, he goes to Swargaloka. And we are talking about that person. So the Krishna Gati of the Vedic ritualist who did a lot of yagas, that is talked about. And in this sutra, Vyasacharya answers the second reasoning given by the Purvapakshi to establish that in the third stage, jiva becomes the abhimani jiva in the plant. That what we discussed in the previous sutra. He is now giving the second reason to refute that. Jiva becomes the abhimani jiva in the plant. Abhimani jiva, all this host jiva, gas jiva, all that. Abhimani jiva is host jiva. Gas jiva is antargata jiva. We should be clear in all those terms. So the question is whether the pashu himsa, sacrifice of all these animals in Vaidika karmas, is it a papa karma or not? It's a very, very important question. This sutra is a very important sutra. And it is an aside topic, an incidental topic. We will discuss it briefly. Because this lingers in the minds of a lot of people. Himsa is papam. Hurting anything is papam. Hurting not only physically, manasa, vacha, karmana is papam. Even internally, if a person is causing injury to somebody, even it's a papam also. This we all know. Now the debate is what? If there is a ritual involving animal sacrifice, then naturally the question will be, will it become a papa karma or papa mishrita punya karma? Because people also say, by doing all these yagas, you get a lot of punyam also. So it is not just only papam free punyam it is. It may be punyam, but it is not papam free. So it may be a papa karma altogether, or it can be a karma which is mixed with papa karma. It may be a punya karma mixed with papa karma also. So whether it is dharmikam or adharmikam, doing all these yagas involving animal sacrifices, is it dharmikam or adharmikam? According to Siddhanti Vyasacharya, it is not papam at all. Vyasacharya's conclusion is based on Veda Vidhi, Shruti Pramanam. According to Shruti, Vyasacharya says it is not at all papam. Now, in the third stage, it is discussed. Third stage means you should know. Panchagni Vidya, first a person goes to Sargaloka. From Sargalota, he comes to Megha, and Megha to earth plants. So that's the third stage. So in the third stage, it is discussed whether the jiva becomes abhimani jiva or antargada jiva without going through sukham and dukkham of the jiva. Abhimani jiva means he is born as a plant, a tree, or he enters into the plant as an antargada jiva, because then that will be converted to food to be consumed by the male body. So this is the context. So we should understand the context clearly. So the Purvapakshi says that he becomes Abhimani Jiva due to the papams acquired due to Pasuhimsa involved in the Vedic rituals. He is born as a tree. He becomes a tree according to Purvapakshi because of the papa. Therefore, papa mishrita punyam alone, this Jiva has got, and it is a temporary phase. He got a punyam mixed with papam, and it is a temporary phase. However, Vyasacharya says jiva goes through plants, and the actual plant jiva undergoing pleasure and pain is different from this traveling jiva. There is already a tree. That tree has got tree jiva. That is the actual jiva that is there in that thing. And in that jiva, this one enters the Panchagni process, and that is the antargada jiva. And it does not have pain and suffering, whereas the original host jiva, that plant, goes through pain and suffering. Somebody cuts that tree, it has to go through whatever is pain and suffering as a result of that. So all those things that will go through, whereas this antargata jiva will not go through any of those things. Now this is what Vyasacharya says. Now the question is whether the pasu himsa involved in Vedic rituals is papa karma or punya karma. This is a thing which with lot of discussion, as I told. And Vyasacharya says that it is not ashuddha karma at all. Ashuddha means papa. It is not ashuddha karma at all. It is not just ashuddha karma only. It is not a papa karma at all, according to Vyasacharya. That is why several people have several opinions. As an aside topic, I will slightly discuss this thing, because a lot of people may have a lot of questions about their opinions about this, just to give some clarity. I will spend some time in discussing this particular question. So why several people have several opinions, and each group has its own opinion also. Let us see some opinions, 3-4 opinions. Let us see what are the scenarios. The extreme Hindu group is highly critical of animal sacrifice. That we know. They are highly sacrifice of animal sacrifice. They are critical. And through that, they criticize even the Hindu dharma, Hindu religion, Vedas, Vedic rituals, Vedic priests, even all those things, they are all going on that you might know. And they say it is an uncivilized practice. This is one group. Generally, they tell the story of Buddha in this context, calling him to be a most compassionate person in the world. Because Buddha, he preached ahimsa so much. They also take to Nastikavada also, and they strongly criticize Veda, Vedokta karmas, and all the practices. But the surprising thing is here, it's an aside point, the group that is against Veda, they never campaign against the slaughterhouses itself directly.
they criticize so much the Vedas, Vedic injunctions and the Veda mantras and the Vedic practice, but they don't criticize so much the slaughterhouses that are hundreds and thousands of them all over the globe, which treat animals most cruelly. And they talk of Vedic ritual and not the slaughterhouses at all in all their in the campaign. And whether they are really against the sacrifice or against the Veda is our doubt. Because if they have to condemn the Veda itself directly, they should be should not be supporting slaughterhouses also. They don't say anything about it. And many consumers of meat, they seem to, many of them are Buddhists also. So the animals saved from of the, all the Vedashalas, they end up going to Pakashalas, the cooking places. So this is one group of people. Then comes the next group of people. They are slightly moderate. And they say, animal sacrifice is wrong, but do not criticize Veda for it. They say animal is wrong, correct. But do not criticize Veda for it. They say, we should be discriminative and find out the wrong karmas prescribed in Vedas. All those karmas which involve animal sacrifice. You identify all those karmas. So do not reject the entire Veda. Accept the proper karmas and only improper karmas involving animal sacrifice and all alone you should reject. This is the second group of people. And then there is a third group. They ask, who are we to judge, to pass a judgment on Vedic statement? Who are we? Because they are all aporishayas. We cannot make any judgment. Therefore, they say all the karmas are proper only. Some of them were relevant in the past and some of them are not relevant in the present. But according to Vedas, whatever it says, they are all correct only. But they may not be suiting the present past time and present time. So therefore, do not criticize them. We need not practice them. If you think that is not appropriate for you, you don't practice them. Do not criticize the Veda for it. That is some people's argument. This is group three. Then there is a fourth group. And they say, you discuss whether animal sacrifice is right or wrong. And Vedas never say animal sacrifice should be done or not. Veda never says that. No animal offering is involved in all these rituals also. But there are animal images. This is called pittapasus in all the yagas. And they are made up of rice powder or wheat powder. They make some kind of figurines, some kind of balls and those kinds of shapes with these powders. And then what is said is symbolically, you sacrifice the animal using these kinds of materials. And the purpose of symbolic sacrifice is that what? You sacrifice the animal instinct in you. So by offering these things as sacrifices, you tend to sacrifice the animal instinct in every one of us because every one of us has some instinct out there that which may not be fully human. So such instincts are there. This is the way. So we change an animal man. We call the animal man the Prakrita Purushaha, a person who lives the life according to his own whims and fancies. Such a person, Prakrita Purushaha, according to nature, a nature person, to human, to a not just a nature person, but a refined person, a Samskrita Purushaha. From Prakrita Purushaha, he becomes Samskrita Purushaha, and from Samskrita Purushaha, we can, Swamiji call it man-man to God-man. So this is the stage. So to sacrifice all the animal instincts symbolically with all the tapas and all the niyamas, this is done. This is one group. So these are the opinions of the four groups about animal sacrifice that I just identified. There may be others also, which I might not have told here, but there are a lot of discussions on these things. Okay. Now, all of them, all the four, whatever we discussed, and many others also, they will all fall into any of these categories. And then one can decide what one wants to choose. That freedom one has. And Vyasacharya's approach is different from all the four. That is what we need to understand. These are the popularly known different opinions on animal sacrifice and all that thing, ahimsa, ahimsa, all that thing. Whereas Vyasacharya comes from a different angle. And Shankaracharya says, when you judge the karma is proper or improper, what is the norm for your judgment? Shankaracharya asked a fundamental question. Still, somebody's microphone is on. Please be sensitive to others. So, Shankaracharya says, the karma is proper or improper if you want to judge. What is the norm of your judgment? Any judgment is based on one norm or the other. And in the context of Vedic scriptures, what happens in the context of Vedic scriptures? We are talking about Vedic scriptures here. All Vaidikas, all the Vaidikas means all those who believe in Veda Dharma. All Vaidikas, they accept two types of phalam for any karma. Without the basic acceptance of an umpire, for example, in any match, any cricket match or whatever match it is, a game is not possible. You need an umpire. So judgment is like that. This is the norm. So we have to accept all the karmas have visible phalam and invisible phalam. Visible phalam is called the drishta phalam and invisible phalam is called adrishta phalam. So every karma has got both. So the invisible consequences are, they are called, they are punya papa. Punya papa, they are all invisible, adrishta phalam. You cannot see punyam, you cannot see papa. But you can see drishta phalam, several other things you can see. So drishta phalam is known by the instruments of knowledge. For example, if the air conditioner is going very well, your body feels very comfortable. So you have the instruments of your own knowledge to assess the drishta phalam of having a nice air conditioning facility. Whereas adrishta phalam is not available for perception. Any amount of sense perceptions you have, any amount of instruments of knowledge you have, you cannot see adrishta phalam. There are fundamental axioms accepted by the Vedic students. And when they study Vedas, there are some axioms that are accepted first. And the acceptance of this is called Shraddha. Guru Vedanta Vakyadishum Vishwasahat Shraddha. So you should have firm faith in the statements of the scriptures and the Guru. That is Shraddha. So this is what, so Punya Papa is two. And the third axiom is what? What is that? The acceptance of all this is called Shraddha. So Punya Papam is one, Shraddha is number two. And the third axiom is Adrishta Palam is Apavrusheya. It is not, you cannot understand it through any means of knowledge. It is Apavrusheya, not of human origin also, and can be known through Apavrusheya Pramana only, which is Vedas. So Adrishta Palam cannot be known through any other means. It can be known only through Vedic scriptures, which are Apavrusheya Pramanas. They are Vedic scriptures. So when a Vaidika discusses propriety of an action, what he does? He does the Adrishta Palam also. Not only the Drishta Palam, Adrishta Palam also he takes. Punya Papas and all those things associated with that also he takes. So it is even more important, this Adrishta Palam, it is even more important than the Drishta Palam, because Adrishta Palam gives him spiritual growth also. That is his intent. Because his intent is what? To gain liberation, to get moksha, to get jnanam. With Atma Jnanam only one can get moksha. So he is going through the path of karma to get Chitta Shuddhi, Chitta Naishchalyam and all that. But it is spiritual growth. So the norm of judgment is based on the Punya Papa criterion. And what is punyam and what is papam? Yat veda vihitam tad punya janakam. Whatever is acceptable to Vedas, the vidhi, they are punya janakam. They generate punya karmas. So this is the fourth axiom. And whatever is permitted by Vedas is punya janakam. And what is prohibited by the Vedas is papa janakam. They will give rise to papa. And while debating the issue, we should also know what is our norm? What is the norm with which we are trying to judge and understand, analyze? Adrishta Palam or Drishta Palam? When we do a karma, are we going to focus on the Adrishta Palam part of it or the Drishta Palam part of it? If a person, for example, anyone who does not believe in Adrishtam or Veda Pramanam, it is better to say, I am not interested in this topic. Don't talk to me Adrishtam and all. I don't believe in all that thing. So I'm not interested in that topic. And then sign off. And Shankaracharya says, for a Vaidika who believes in Adrishta Palam. So we are now segmenting people. For those people who are Vaidikas, who believe in Vedic scriptures, And because they believe in Vedic scriptures, they should also believe in Adrishta Phalam, because that is what is given by the Vedic scriptures and Veda Pramanam. So from Adrishta Drishtya, Pasu Himsa is Shuddham only. This is their contention. From Adrishta Drishtya, from the invisible Adrishta Phalam, from that angle, Pasu Himsa is Shuddha Karma only, is a pure karma only. It is not a Papa Karma, according to them. This is for those people, for a Vaidika, who believes in Adrishta Phalam and Veda Pramanam, because Veda says that, so Pasu Himsa is considered a Shuddha Karma only. And Shankaracharya also says, Ahimsa is a Samanya Dharma. Very true. Samanya Dharma means everybody has to follow. Ahimsa Paramodharma. This is considered to be a very, very great virtue. Everybody has to follow. But there are occasions where Vishesha Dharma, it overpowers Samanya Dharma. It is not in all cases. Vishesha Dharma means particular dharma, specific dharmas. So some anushtanas, they overpower even Samanya Dharma. So Ahimsa is Samanya Dharma. It is common to everybody. Everybody has to follow. But on occasions, there are exceptions. For example, Krishna himself tells Arjuna, Ahimsa is the greatest dharma, he tells him. At the same time, Krishna says, killing Drona and Bhishma and all the other people in a dharmic battle is dharmic only. And it will take him to even heaven. He says, it is not an Ashuddha Karma, it will even take him to heaven. So, Pasu Himsa is Dharma or Adharma, depends upon the view taken by a person. So, that's what finally he comes to saying that. So, if there are still people continuing to do all that thing, as I mentioned sometime in the last class, some details about even my own interaction with people on the subject. But according to Veda Vyasa and also Shankara, they try to say that when you look at from the norm, if the norm of looking at Punya Papas, then Adrishta Karma, Adrishta Phalam is considered to be, is given as in the scriptures. So Pasu Himsa is not considered a Papa Karma at all. It is considered a Shuddha Karma only. That is what they are trying to. This is an aside point. We don't have to dwell too much into that thing because it's a big debate. And because Swamiji gave such opinions, I'm just only echoing whatever he has said. Now let us go to the word analysis of the sutra. Ashuddham iti chete na shabdat. That is the sutra. Ashuddham iti chet na shabdat. Ashuddham. Ashuddham means the Vedic ritual is impure. The ritual impure. Ashuddham is impure. Vedic ritual. It means it's supply, we have to supply that. So the Vedokta karma, all these yagas and all, they are impure. And the Siddhantin says, if this is your view, so Ashuddham, if you say it's iti chet, if you say so, it's your view, na. It is not correct. Why? Shabdat. Because it is prescribed by Veda Pramanam. Here, Shabda means Vedas, Shruti. It is prescribed by Veda Pramanam. Now, let us see the significance of the words. First, Ashuddha. Ashuddham. Ashuddham is impure or wrong or bad. We can call it anyway. And he takes it here as Papa Janakam. Papa Janakam, that will give rise to Papa. Based on Samanya Dharma. Because if you consider Himsa as a Samanya Dharma, Ashuddham is considered Papa Janakam because it is not a Samanya, as from the point of view of Samanya Dharma. This is Purva Pakshi's contention. That's what he is telling. And if this is the view, iti chet, it is not acceptable now. Why? Shabdat. Veda itself presents it as an exception to the original law. That's what he calls. Ultimately speaking, no action is good or bad. Look at the conclusions we are coming in. No action is good or bad. Himsa is sometimes good, sometimes bad. We always say dharma is relative only. There are many, many gray areas. We should be careful. Since dharma is relative, one cannot say, I will do anything I like also. First to follow dharma, and when the gray area comes, lot of analysis are involved. And then you have to conclude in such situations, one should take the right conclusion if one is mature by oneself. Normally, one is not mature by oneself. That is a rare phenomenon mostly, to take the right conclusion. If one is mature enough, one can. But it's very difficult. So when one is not mature enough to take the right action, particularly when it concerns oneself. We may be giving great advices to all others. When it comes to oneself, always there are dichotomous situations. So always at those times, go to the right person for advice who gives the right advice. A learned scholar or a person, a guru, all those things. Then we have got so many people well experienced people. So there is no absolute punyam, no absolute papam at all. Any karma can be designated based on the context, based on so many other factors, punyam or papam. And dharma devata knows that thing means very subtle manner. So it will always give the right kind of judgment based on your karma, whether it be classified punya karma or papa. Let us go to the next sutra. Retasigyo Gotam Retasigyo Gaha Atha 317th Tanning Brahma Sutra, 26th Brahma Sutra, Sutra of this particular Pada, third chapter. Now let us come back to the main topic of discussion of this Adhikarana. Our controversy is what? When Jiva passes through plants and trees, does the Jiva become Antargata Jiva or Abhimani Jiva? Right? And now, when I use these terms, I hope you are all comfortable with that. Whether the Jiva becomes an Antargata Jiva or whether the Jiva becomes an Abhimani Jiva. But the Abhimani Jiva means the Jiva should become the plant. So whether the Jiva is a guest Jiva or host Jiva. So host Jiva is Abhimani Jiva, guest Jiva is Antargata Jiva. And in support of that, Vyasacharya gives another argument based on Chandogyam 5.10.6, which we already read. Abram Bhutva Mego Bhavati, Mego Bhutva Pravarshati, Taiha Vrihi Yava Oshadi Vanaspataya Stilamasha Iti Jayante, Ato Vaikalu Dush Nishprapataram, Yoyohi Annamati, Yoretaha Sinchati, Tadbuya Yeva Bhavati. This mantra we already read. So after passing through the plant, the human being consumes the plant, and when the Jiva is to become a manushya, a human being, this Jiva has to enter the manushya shariram, human body, through the food. So it is now in the form of food, it has to enter into the human body. It has to enter into the male and then enter into the female in the fifth stage. So all these four ashramas, now if you take the human person, the male body, of the four ashramas, it cannot enter into an ashrami of any ashrama. It has to enter into an adult male human being who wants to become a father. A person who may be able to procreate to such an adult male only, it has to go. It cannot go to a sannyasi body or some other body. So the Upanishad uses a special word for such an adult, first, a person who is such a would-be father, that adult of the correct ashrama. So it uses a specific word in this particular sutra. It's called retasik. So retaha means manushya bijam, the seed of the human male, retaha, retas. And then jiva in bijam rupam, in the seed form, is in the male body. And the would-be father's transfer of this bijam, this seed, to the female body is called retasik. So the Upanishad uses a word that the jiva becomes retasik. All without bhashya, we will be nowhere. Upanishad uses a word that the jiva becomes retasik. And Vyasacharya asks the question, how can you understand this expression? He becomes a retasik means, and here you cannot take the mukhya artha here, the primary meaning, and you have to take the figurative meaning only, that it does not become an adult male, but it gets association with the adult male. It does not become adult male, but it becomes associated with an adult male. The jiva in plant kingdom becomes an adult male. The jiva in plant body gets association with the male body. The jiva in plant body gets association with the male body. And this Purva Paksha has to agree that jiva cannot straight away become a male adult. It's not possible, he has to agree. So we have to take the figurative meaning only in the case of the plant kingdom also. This is the argument of Vyasacharya. Let us see the word analysis of this sutra. Retasigyo Gotam. Retasik Yogaha. Jiva gets association with the adult male human being. Yogaha is association. So he gets association with the adult male human being. And this is the running meaning of this sutra. Now let us see the significance of these words. So after passing through the plant body, Retasik Yogaha. So Retasik means an adult male human being, one in a reproductive condition, all those things we have to put in the right ashrama and all that thing, the would-be father, Yogaha. Yogaha here is samsarga praptihi and not janma praptihi. Samsarga prapti, association he gets and not birth itself, yet janma prapti. So the suffering of the male body, all the other things, of the sukham, dukkham and all that thing, that will not affect the new jiva. We have told it's a guest body, will not affect it. Only host body goes through all these sufferings. Sukham, dukkham and all. And yoga. Yoga is samsarga in this context, union. And then comes the last sutra of the pada. Yone Sharira. 27th sutra, first pada, third chapter, 318th running Brahma Sutra. Yone He Sharira. And in this sutra, Vyasacharya says that this jiva becomes the guest of the male body. So this jiva doesn't become body. It is not the abhimani jiva. It is only antargata jiva. And when it is in male's body, it does not have sukham and dukkham. That also we already taught. Sukham, dukkham are only for the abhimani jiva, not for the antargata jiva. And then it is transferred to the female body. And in the female body also, it is transferred as an antargata jiva only and not as abhimani jiva. Then when it takes its own body upon birth and the new full-fledged jiva is born, that alone is the original body of the jiva and it is the owner of the body. And through that body only, after it comes out into the world, punya papa karma begins. Till that time, it has no punya papa karma acquisition at all. Now only it is going to head sukham, dukham, punyam, papam, all those things only at this stage. So till this is called the boga sharira. This newly born, that body is called the boga sharira. Till now, punya papa karma worked for transit. Transit from all those ways, swarga to mega to earth and all that thing. It worked for the transit. And boga begins the experiences. They begin after the fifth stage of birth. So in the previous stages, ramaniya charana and kapuya charana is, that's not used because this already you have, I mentioned this thing in the other mantra. Ramaniya charana, punya karmas, papa karmas and all those things, they are not used in the previous stages when it is in the transit. Only after it takes its own body, then all those things, sarpunya papa karmas, of that is used. Because the usage of ramaniya and kapuya charana, hereafter only the janma is counted. Up to this, all these transits not counted as a janma at all. Otherwise, you'll be having each time infinite number of janmas going back and forth, back and forth. So this is the general sutra. Without it also we have. So now let us do the word analysis of this sutra. Here the sutra is what? Yonehe sharira. Yonehe means from the womb of the mother. Womb of the mother, from the womb. Shariram, the human body emerges. Now let us see the significance of the words. This is the sutra. Let us give the significance of the words. Yoni represents the fifth stage in the Panchagni Vidya. Fifth stage is yoni. And shariram means the emergence of the physical body, it implies, which was received in the punya janma marana kala in the rudimentary form, in the purva janma. I mentioned to you the subtle physical body is generated at that time, at the time of death. Yes, small subtle body, not the subtle body, the sukshma shariram, but a subtle physical body is generated at that time. And in the purva janma, during the marana kala, at the time of death, in rudimentary form. That also we told all those words we have used earlier. So that rudimentary body has become the full-fledged body that we call as janma. So now only we call it as janma. When the rudimentary body becomes a full-fledged body. So in the previous stages, janma should be taken only in figurative stage sense. Punya papa experience starts now only. Till now, no punya papa affects this transit body. With this, the fourth sutra of the Sadhikaranam is also over, because that concept should be clear. And the first pada of this third chapter is also over. So the travel of Jiva after death and various allied topics, they were all covered in this particular pada. So we come to know here, getting Manusha Janma is extremely rare thing. By going through the process itself, we will know. Very rare thing. Since it is so rare, it is better to cross over the Punarapi Jananam, Punarapi Maranam cycle in this Janma. I do not know what will be my next Janma also. So get detached from Janma Marana Praptim in this rare human Janma itself. One should not go through the cycle. Next, that is the intent that everybody has to aspire to. That is the intent of the human birth, to get moksha. Now let us go to the second pada of third chapter. Before I go to the second pada, as usual, I'll try to introduce this pada also. It's an important pada. Here, now we have completed the first pada, the first quarter of the third chapter, first pada of the third chapter. And now the third chapter, I already mentioned this word earlier, is called the Sadhana Adhyaya. Sadhana Adhyaya it is, that focus on Vedanta Sadhanani, various Vedic sadhanas. And now we should remember Sadhyam, and that is what Jivatma Paramatma, which is revealed through Mahavakya Tattvamasi. So that is Sadhyam is this. We should understand Jivatma Paramatma, Aikyam and all that. Tattvamasi is the actual Mahavakyam that we are trying to understand. So when we say Jnanam is Sadhyam, is the goal, Jnanam is not self-knowledge. Jnanam is self-knowledge, not any chemistry knowledge or anything. So we remember the fact that Jnanam and Moksha are identical, because in this context, Jnanam happens to be the knowledge of the fact that I am ever free. This is the knowledge. Jnanam happens to be the knowledge of the fact that I am ever free. That is the Jnanam we are trying to get. Therefore, knowledge and freedom, freedom from the cycle of birth and death, that happens to be identical in Vedanta. Knowledge, this Jnanam, Atma Jnanam, and freedom from cycles of birth and death, they happen to be identical in Vedanta. We cannot say that knowledge gives freedom. It is only a figurative expression. But knowledge is freedom. Knowledge is freedom. Knowledge, we should not say knowledge gives freedom. Figuratively, we in the initial stages, we use such expressions. But ultimately, knowledge is freedom. That's what we should understand. It is the knowledge of the fact that I am knowledge. I am knowledge. The entire chapter 3 has 4 padas, as we mentioned earlier, of which we have completed the first pada, where we analyze the journey of the Jiva after death through the Panjagni portion. And the indirect benefit of the discussion is what? Vairagya Praptihi. That also we mentioned earlier. So even though Vairagyam, one gets Vairagyam, Sadhana Chaturthi Sampatti, all that. So even though directly it deals with Jiva Gati, the travel of Jiva, indirectly it is supposed to generate the Vairagyam in the listener. By understanding this chapter, one gets Vairagyam. Pramatha is defined as that person in whom alone Pramana will do its job. Any Pramanam will do its job in the right Pramatha. That is Prama Jananam, the Jananam of wisdom, the creation of knowledge, Prama. Pramanam can generate wisdom on Pramatha, the person who is ready to gain that wisdom. The very status of Pramanam as Pramanam depends upon the status of Pramatha. So the efficiency of Vedanta depends upon, not on Vedanta, but depends upon my qualification and my Vairagyam. My Vairagyam becomes an important sadhana for Jnana Utpatti. For getting Jnanam, my Vairagyam is a very, very important step. Vairagyam gives sadhana chatushtaya sampatti, Viveka Vairagya, all that stuff, Samadhi Shakta Sampatti, Mukshutum, all those things we discussed earlier. Or you can refer to Tattva Bodha, which makes a person an adhikari, the eligible to gain, to go through Jnana Marga. Adhikari makes a pramatha, and pramatha alone knows pramana. So Prathama Pada, the first Padam highlights Vairagyam. And Vairagyam is supposed to be important in the fourfold qualifications, Viveka Vairagya and all that thing we have told. Now let us enter into the second pada. So first pada, we have all got Vairagya. Now we are all eligible. Now let us go to second pada. Let us now introduce this pada. So this pada has 8 adhikaranams, 8 topics with 41 sutras, the bigger pada compared to the previous one. Tat Tvam Padartha Shodhanam is the topic of this pada. Tat Tvam, both in Tattvamasi, Tat Tvamasi, the analysis of these two terms, Tat and Tvam, that is the topic of this pada. So the words Tvam and Tat occurring in Mahavakyam will be analyzed here. And it will be seen whether we should take the Lakshyartha or the Vachyartha, the implied meaning or the literal meaning of the Mahavakyam. Now the question is, why should we do this job at all? Should we have to do it? The rule is, meaning of a sentence requires knowledge of the meaning of the constituent words. Pada jnanam vina vakyartha jnanam naiva udbhavati. Without the knowledge of the words in the sentence, knowledge of the sentence is not possible. And here our sentence is what? Jivatma Paramatma Aikya Jnanam, which is called Mahavakyartha, Mahavakyartha Jnanam. Therefore, Jivatma Paramatma Aikyam is equal to Mahavakyartha Jnanam. And Vakyartha Jnanam presupposes Padartha Jnanam. Vakyartha Jnanam means the knowledge of the sentence. It presupposes the Padartha Jnanam, the meaning of the Padas, all the individual words, which is Tat Pada. Tat is one word, Tvam is another word, Tvam Padam, and Asi Pada. In Tattvam Asi, these three words are there. And of these three Padas, the most important word is Tat and Tvam Padas. And if you understand these two words, Asi Pada will come to play naturally. By saying that Tattvam Asi, Mahavakyam conveys Tat Pada is equal to Tvam Pada. Now we are coming to equations. Tat Pada is equal to Tvam Pada. That's what it conveys. So Tat Padartha being Paramatma and Tvam Padartha being Jivatma, that Paramatma and this Jivatma are one and the same. When Tat Pada and Tvam Pada, Tattva Pada is equal to Tvam Pada, that's what it means. Tvam Padartha being Jivatma, Tat Padartha being Paramatma, both should be same. And since it is equating the two, we can call it as a great equation, Mahavakyam. And the condition for equation is what? These are all simple things which we know in day-to-day life, but to look at in perspective gives us some interesting outcomes. Condition of an equation is not required if two things are evidently identical. If two things are evidently identical, do we need an equation? Identity is already evident and known. An equation is meant to communicate the identity. And if identity is already evident, where is the need to equate? Again, an equation is not possible if two things are different also. You cannot say 8 is equal to 7. If misidentification is evident, equation is not possible. So equation requires two important conditions. They must be superficially different. At the same time, really they must be identical. They should be superficially different, but really they should be identical. Which means superficial differences, they are evident. And the real identity is hidden and not evident. It is covered by or concealed by superficial differences. When there is a hidden identity, a pramanam is required to discover or unveil or to reveal the hidden identity. When there is a hidden identity, you need a pramanam to discover, to reveal the hidden identity, which is hidden by superficial differences. Understand, it's not real difference. For example, if you set up an equation, 5 plus 3 is equal to 9 minus 1. It's a simple equation. 5 plus 3 equals 9 minus 1. This we can write. Superficially seeing, my eye shows differences only. Both numbers are different. Not only the numbers are different, the mathematical symbols are also different. In one side it is plus, another side it says minus. And one is in the right hand side, another is the left hand side. And this equation to tell behind the superficial differences that I see, all the numbers are different, the symbols are different, there are two sides of this thing. behind all these things, behind these superficial differences, there is something else. There is a hidden identity. So here the teacher accepts the superficial difference exists. Therefore, he does not deny the fact that superficial difference exists here. There is no two opinion about it. These differences we see directly. And the teacher only wants to tell the student not to dwell upon the superficial difference, which is non-controversial, but communicate the hidden identity. Yeah, it's not controversial. It looks, they are all different. Superficial difference, if you keep in mind, it is a resisting mind. If you keep the superficial difference in your mind, it is a resisting mind. Teacher has to push the identity. It is impossible to convey the teaching to such a mind, which is a resisting mind. Therefore, bhakti or shraddha, appreciation to the teacher is required from the student. Cooperation is required on the part of the student. That is beneficial to the student only. In all these debates and all, often there is no cooperation and no teaching takes place. These are all Vidantavadam only. It will go on. You can have discussion forever. Nothing happens. So a lot of heat is generated than any light from those discussions. So for light to be generated, the student should cooperate. Therefore, in the beginning part of the teaching, concentrate on not on equal sides, but focus on one of the sides. For example, left-hand side. First, the student analyzes the left-hand side and thereafter the right-hand side. First, we focus on tat padartha. We are now coming to tatvamasi now. Tat padartha or tvam padartha without bothering about the equal sign. So first, understand the tat padartha or tvam padartha by themselves without worrying about the equation sign, the equal to sign. And the example equation that we saw, first I explain 8 is on both sides and then focus on the middle equation. And then the student effortlessly nods his head in appreciation. So first understand the 8, 5 plus 3 on that side, 9 minus 1 on this side, both are 8. First focus on that. And then when the attention is pointed to the equal to sign, the student will be able to appreciate and understand. I'm telling about elementary. Similarly, if Jivatma and Paramatma are different, we need not discuss at all. Even when Vedanta need not talk about that, if they are different completely, it is an evident fact. Where is the need for all these Vedanta? Mahavakyam says Jivatma and Paramatma Veda is there. But I want you to forget the difference aspect now. I want you to show the hidden and the concealed identity between them. Mahavakyam says they are different, Jivatma, Paramatma. But it wants to find and make us understand the hidden identity. You should cooperate and analyze the lakshyartha, the pure consciousness. Tat and tvam are different. But when you go to the lakshyartha, the pure consciousness, analyze the tatpada lakshyartha, which is pure consciousness only by analysis. What does it mean, the word tat? And when you arrive at the consciousness and also forget the equation signs, then they realize the jiva consciousness and paramatma, jivatma consciousness and paramatma consciousness are the same after you analyze the tatpada and tvampada. So by this teaching of the guru, the students understood this knowledge in Chandogya Upanishad. That is how he tried to explain it in Chandogya. So padartha sodhanam is sadhanam and vakyartha jnanam is the end. Analysis of the constituent words is the sadhana and jnanam, vakyartha jnanam is the end. So jivatma and paramatma swarupa vichara is sadhana. Inquiry into the nature of jivatma and paramatma is the sadhana. Jivatma and paramatma aikya jnanam, they are one and the same. The asipadam, that is sadhyam, that is the goal. That is the end. So it is this padartha vichara that is the topic of the second pada. So the entire pada is going to talk about analysis of the two words tatpadam and tvampadam. And in this pada, the first four adhikaranams, they deal with tvampadartha, the meaning of the word tvam. Tvampadartha sodhanam. That sodhanam means analysis. Or jivatma vichara. Then the last four adhikaranams, they deal with tatpadartha sodhanam. Paramartha vichara. Paramatma vichara. So this is the general introduction to the second pada. Now we will go to the first adhikaranam in the next class, that is tomorrow.
यो वेदादौ स्वरप्रोक्तो वेदान्ते च प्रतिष्ठितः तस्य प्रकृतिलीनस्य यः परसमहेश्वरः पूर्णमदः पूर्णमिदं पूर्णात् पूर्णमुदच्यते पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादाय पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः हरिः ओम् श्रीकृष्णार्पणमस्तु